accession number 18621, reel 4.
Let's start reel 4. You were talking about the Bailey Bridges in Italy.
Yeah, we crept over these bridges, and as I said, we cut a lot of timber from, but I don't know what they used the timber for, Bailey Bridges, but as we said in the sawmill, we got in the war, everything was controlled by the Ministry of Supply, and everything we cut was for war work of some sort. We cut wedges for launching boats and popping them up, and all the finest timber. And one of our biggest ones is we cut trees, beech trees, up in West Dean Woods, because the Ministry of Supply, no matter who owned the ground, if they wanted those trees, they'd have them. And we cut them because the biggest sawmill in the south of England. And one lot, after a lot of harrying, went for, supposedly, for mosquitoes. Whether that is actually because the mosquitoes were supposed to be built in a birch, but I know someone who was in the trade, who worked for these, and he said that no birch was imported into Britain from Canada through the whole war. So anyway, that's beside the point. We tunnelled down through Italy, we stopped at Rimini. There was a Nissen hut and a Romney shed, and there was a German prisoner of war brass band playing music. They gave us breakfast. Not quite a nice breakfast, early in the morning this was, the next morning, early in the morning, from midnight at Milan down to Rimini. It was desolate. Completely desolate. There was just heaps of rubble, holes, everything, desolate. Back on the train, we had time for a wash and a bit of a tidy up. And our biggest problem was we never had any fags. We had to have a seven-a-day free issue. That was all the fags we had. And the blokes that didn't smoke, they were had more friends than they ever knew what to do with. So a bar of chocolate was worth seven fags. And the chocolate was white by this time. I mean, God knows how long it had been in the store. It was just wrapped up in a plain white wrapper. So anyway, we went from there down to Rome, past Rome. Guard your kit, because the Romans might, some of the people might get on board and pinch it, because they were, you know, I mean, but everywhere you went was desolation, mud still. And all the way down through there was rifles stuck in the ground with their bayonet and the helmet on the top. British, American, German, everywhere you saw it was like a forest of rifles in some of the worst of the places. Now, I don't know if you've ever read that poem that was written to the tune of Lily Mile Lane about the D-Day Dodgers. Have you ever read that?
Yes.
Through the look away in the mountains, through the mud and rain, was one of the verses. Anyway, about the 8th Army. We eventually finished up in Naples. 38 hours afterwards, after we left Milan. And, well, Monte Cassino was still desolate at that time. That had been blasted by the Yanks. They bombed the Polish division there as well, and some of ours and some of their own, as well as the monastery. Anyway, we got to Naples, and we were carted to a hill that looked out across the Bay of Naples to Vesuvius, which was having a little bit of smoke at the time. It was raining. We were in canvas. This was second week in March by this time. It was raining. We were there for 10 days. It rained for 10 days. We went into Naples a couple of times, but it was not very nice. It was a bit smelly and knocked about a bit and so on and so forth. Anyway, every little boy had a sister at home. It was the sort of thing it was at that time then. And we're going tomorrow. 10 days we're going. On the 11th day we were going. There's the docks, what was left of them. And the boat was an American Kaiser-built Liberty boat. The Empire Rival, one of those welded ships that Kaiser supplied. The Empire Rival, not very big, but they're all called Empire. That was the Ministry of Transport thing, Empire so-and-so. So we get on this, there was about 600 of us. I don't know how big the boat was. It must have been something like 5,000 tons or something. No ballast, only us. We were in three-tier bunks, then right down at the bottom of the ship. With a screw along the side of us, a screw cover alongside of us, a shaft, each side. The toilets were on deck, galvanised tin toilets with a gap at the bottom about a foot high. They were flush. It was flush with the waves coming up over the front because it was, I don't know what force it was, but the water was dreadful. The waves were coming up over the front of the boat, over the sides of the boat and everything. You sat at the toilet. You had to, when we got up, there was lines rigged up. You had to clip yourself onto a line. That was the orders. And have a jacket on, a life jacket on, to go anywhere on deck. And we heaved our way through the eastern Mediterranean, and that weather did not stop until we got into Athens, or Piraeus for Athens, where someone got off. It wasn't too bad going up the coast of Greece, and we pulled in. We didn't go into Salonika, because you couldn't get into Salonika. There were several boats sunk in the harbour, so they took us off in tenders. And we marched up to a factory, another tobacco factory, where we stayed there a couple of nights there in Salonika. And then we got on a train. And the train wound its way up through over on plains and up over mountainsides and through tunnels, rock, chopped into the rock, alongside of sheer drops. And apparently the line was actually built by the British many years before. And we had quite a contingent of troops in Greece and whatever in the First War, because a lot of them were buried in Salonika Cemetery. Quite a few died from malaria. Malaria was malignant. So we finished up, we went up through Drama, down through to Kavala, from Kavala up to, Kavala was quite a biggish town, up to Xanthi, which wasn't a very biggish town. There was still the 30 of us. We picked up some Somersets as well, the 2nd Battalion of the Somersets. We were going to prop their people up. They were at Komotini, which was up near Alexandroupolis, the last bit of the line before you get the Dardanelles, Turkey. And we were only there at the invitation of the Greek government to keep the peace between them and the Elas. We never did anything, but I mean, that's why we were there, at the invitation of the Greek government. I mean, it was 90 miles from us to the Somersets. It was 35 miles down the road up the mountains of the HLI, and Kavala was the brigade headquarters, and then from there it was another 100 and some odd miles to Salonika. So what we were supposed to do if that happened, I don't know. Because 15 miles away was Bulgaria. This was what we knew as was Macedonia, eastern, right up the eastern leg. The mountains were just over there. That's the end of it was fertile. And they were poor. The Greeks were poor. There's no question of it. They were poor. They had bits of terraces up the mountains where they carted soil and that up there, you know, and so on and so forth. And we were in old cavalry barracks. We had a reservoir for our water supply, which was fed from a spring in the mountain. And but this time, you know, I was sent to the office, the orderly office. They wanted somebody in the orderly office. So I got up there and we just sort of got together. We were the camp was in two bits. It was the main part of the camp with the four companies of infantrymen. And then there was the headquarters company, it was eight further, about 250 men headquarters company then. And we did a night guard. We mounted guard, armed guard. And also, for some reason or other, we landed the job of supplying the guard to the Royal Palace in Athens, which was, I think it was about 24 fellows used to go, because they were smart. The Durhams were smart, there's no question about it, and they were smart, these chaps. And come the summertime, they did 20 minutes of time on guard, because it was so hot in Athens, they were allowed 20 minutes, and that was back indoors. But anyway.
Did you do guard in Athens?
No, I didn't ever do guards. Not until later, because I was headquarter company. Headquarter company didn't do things like that. I was sort of a camp guard. Nighttime one, a 12-hour guard from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to late in the morning. That was 12 hours to the army. But anyway, it was quite a nice little town. It was like a lot more towns. You just drove in one end. It was a big square with buildings all around it, and drove at the other end with a couple of little offshoots. Well, the square was a raised piece in the middle, and come the autumn, there was trestles put up there where they dry the tobacco, because tobacco was one of their main crops. Lucky Strike was the main people that went to. And the old women used to all get up there knitting and chatting and doing this and that and the other. And occasionally they would turn the tobacco over to get it all dry. Then it went away to a manufacturer and somewhere else. But that was one of them. Another thing they had plenty of was big melons, big green melons with a red centre. They were bought there for 6 pence each, 2.5p. these big melons, great big green melons they were.
This is in the area of Xanthi, is it?
Xanthi, yeah. Xanthi is opposite, across the water, right in the water from Xanthi is Thasos, or Thysos, the island. That was the First World War flying corps base was on Thasos. Because I knew a man years later who was in the RFC on Thasos, publican. So we soldiered on, we got there in the middle of March. It took us a month to get there, 4 weeks exactly, to get from Newcastle to Xanthi. And there wasn't a lot to do. We had a nice naffy, which was stocked. Anyway, there was a curfew on 8 o'clock at night. Everybody off the street by 8 at night, including squaddies, unless you're on duty for some reason or other. So the naffy shut at 10, and we had to take the naffy girls and the workers home. So a truck used to be put on for them to take them home, you see. Anyway, I got on to sports, and the company CSM was a great man for sports. He lives in Hull now. He was an RSM, but he's involved in boys' clubs up in Hull, Kingston upon Hull. And he said, "Ah, right, you're going to sports." So my mate, and in the high jump, the long jump, and the hop, step, and jump, as we called it, was a great long loony client called the Honourable Humphrey Moon. He was a nice fella, but he was gangly, you know. He couldn't jump to save him. Anyway, we did the regimental ones. Then we were going to the brigade sports. That was a big do. That was the brigade sports. And the brigade was some from Kavala, us, and the HLI, and the Somersets. So we went to an old airfield up the road, and we never had sand pits or mattresses or anything like that to land on. We just landed, jumped off the dirt, landed on the dirt, you know. I hurt my ankle. So I was out of action for a couple of days. We stayed there for a week. Well, the quartermaster, the sergeant in the orderly room said, "You're not going." I said, "Well, look," I said, "he's a CSM, he's higher than you, so I've got to go." "No, you can't." Anyway, I went. So I got my medal there for 110 metres relay hurdles. We came in first. I went back, I got the sack from the orderly room. He said, "You've been there," so I've got somebody else in. He said, "Go to the MT. They want a clerk, he's going home." Well, then there was three of us came from the south of England. There was me, there was the MT clerk who was leaving to come home, and another bloke in a rifle company. He came from somewhere down there, and then the one that was the MT clerk came from down around New Haven way somewhere. He got off the plane from Austria when they moved the 1st Battalion from Italy or Austria to Greece. He got off the plane and got shot in the shoulder. He was the first casualty.
Shot by whom?
An ELAS bloke. The ELAS were the communists. They were very rife at the time. You know, there was no good ways about it, up in the mountains.
Were they causing casualties amongst the British troops?
No, only chance ones, that's all. You know, like him. And they tried. That's why we were there, to keep the peace, as I say. But you see a Greek contingent would go off with mules laded up with field guns, small field guns and ammunition, and the blokes marched, and funnily enough, they wore air uniforms, and they also sort of based themselves on the light infantry for some unknown reason. And they used to go off up the mountains, and they come back, about half of them would come back. And sometimes they'd have prisoners with them, with chains around their legs and their arms, marching along. And half the mules sort of thing, you know. I suppose they get some of the mules, I don't know. But that's because Bulgaria was rife with communism, as was all up through there. I mean, you could hear them up in the mountains shooting at one another, but it didn't affect us directly. It's only that we happened to get in somewhere where they were, and we were banned. But anyway, I got put in the MT, and we had a new officer arrive who had been captured at the island of Kos, last seen in hand-to-hand fighting. He got a military medal, the lieutenant he was, and he came back to join the 1st Battalion from repatriation in England. We were getting a new CO later on as well, who was also captured at Kos. Our quartermaster had been at Kos, and he was last seen hurtling across, sitting in the back of a jeep with the battalion colours, because you couldn't lose the regimental colours. That was a disgrace, that was. And he was last seen disappearing over the horizon with the regimental colours in a jeep until he got to a boat. But anyway, Fred came back from England to join the thing. So he said, the first thing he said, "I'm Fred." I says, well, I said, we're not used to that sort of thing. He said, no, he's a bit, only he said when we're in here in the office. I said, all right. So I was a private still. I mean, but anyway, within a few weeks, you may be a Lance Corporal. So you can't be a Lance, you can't be a private and tell them what to do. You've got to be a Lance Corporal. I said, all right, fair enough. So we had an empty site. We only ever saw him. There was a couple of three corporals. They didn't have anything to do with it. But we used to have a detail every day, like a work roster, what they had to do, you know. We had 80 vehicles from three-ton lorries down right down to jeeps.
Which battalion of the DLI is this?
The first battalion, the Glamour Boys. They were first and second battalion. This time we were down to two battalions, basically. The second battalion was in India, been in the 14th Army, all for the war. The first battalion had been through North Africa, Italy, and all that. A lot of the fellas that was in there were all, had been through the war, right through from day one in North Africa, right up through Italy. A lot of them were going home by the boatload. Well, we started boats by then, just after I got 8 degrees, because this railway was Medlock, Mediterranean Lines of Communication, A and B. We were B, I think it was. I'm not quite sure about that. The other one went from down to Marseille, and we went right down through Italy to Naples. It was an army job. Quite good. So, we got, well, it was cold. It was viciously cold up there. God, there was this infernal wind blew for 6 weeks. It never stopped. It never eased off for 6 weeks, blowing from up across the mountains, you know. We never had a lot of snow, about half an inch one morning, but it was cold. And we had, the office we had was a dirt floor. If you left your boots on the floor, they were stuck to the dirt in the morning. We used to go to bed, make a bed. We had a wooden slatted bed. We had 7 blankets. We had army blankets. We used to make a bed up with them. Go to bed with all our clothes on, except the boots. And a balaclava, a pair of gloves. We used to go to bed with all this on. Right coat on the top, leather jerkin across the feet. I hope you woke up in the morning. We had no heating until later on. The pioneers. We had a pioneer department. Every infantry's got a pioneer department. He's the only chap that can wear a beard, the pioneer sergeant. And Fred's father had been him. Fred was born in the army in India. Joined at 14 as a bugle boy. Anyway, they made us some fires. We had a 4-inch shell case which they cut 3 slots in the bottom and stuck a chimney on the top and lit it and fed it with diesel and water. Used to hiss and spark about and used to get red hot. That was all at night, but Tom, somebody got 8 lit in the morning. Anyway, it was, the brigadier came up to have a look round and he stood and shivered and looked. He said, how many blankets these blokes got? 7, sir. Well, right, they'll have 2 more tomorrow. He said, they can't, 7's not enough, so tomorrow morning the trucks arrive with 2 more blankets for you. We had 9 blankets we had, like a ton weight it was, to try and keep us warm.
9 blankets each?
Yeah, 9 blankets each we had. We had 7 to start with. He said, I've had 2 more. I don't know his name, but the brigadier was. He's a nice fella. Anyway, we're moving. But I got up to the stage, I said, the Lance Corporal. I was still in the roster, so we were a bit short on drivers. We're still taking these nappy girls now. I said, all right. I said, I'll go tonight, and I'll take this other bloke, a corporal. I was not. Yeah, I was a corporal now. Didn't take long to get from Lance Corporal to corporal. I said, I will go and he'll drive. So I said to this bloke, he's as mad as a march here. I said, now look, if you're challenged by a bloke with a rifle or anything in the town, stop. Yeah, righto. I got in the back. We had to have 2 people every time. One in the front, one in the back, you see. I gets in the back. I heard this fella shout, and instead of stopping, he put his foot down. We drove, charged through the square, bang, this Greek sort of militiaman, what would be our home guard for. The bullet came in the back, hit the rails, the metal rails, and splintered all over the place. I copped a bit of the eyebrow, blood running all day, all over my uniform. And the naffy girls were screaming, oh dear, oh dear. By that time, we were out the square and up the street. I had a go at him, and anyway, we dropped. I said, you're mad. The next time, stop. Why? He said, I didn't think he'd have fired. I said, well, he didn't know. We've got a great big Union flag on the painting on the front of the vehicles, and on the back, And the number 68 on there, everything's on there to tell them who we are, but that didn't make any difference to them. We were on his patch. So the next time, a couple of weeks later, I said, I'll drive tonight, I'll take one of these blokes for me. So I drove the vehicle, I learnt the driver this time. Fred had insisted I learnt the drive. He didn't test us, there was two of us and the storeman, but a Remy sergeant came and tested us. It was one of those things where you just get a bit of paper, we were properly done, you know. And I drove through the square, no problem, dropped all these girls off. He got in the front of me and back down, got into the square, and there's this man with a rifle, pointing straight in the windscreen. Oh, better stop, I suppose. Must have been there 10 minutes, this fella standing pointing his rifle in the windscreen. Every time I went to the move, I said, point to the thing, it made a difference. You could see the Union flag on the wind, on the front wing, you know, it was a big one. Made a difference. Until a Greek army officer appeared. And he sorted him out. He said, how long have you been here? I said, I don't know, a long time. We never had a watch. I never had a watch in those days. Well, he sent him on his way. He said, well, it's a good job you stopped. He said, because he'd have shot you. I said, would he? He said, oh, yeah. He said, they're so worked up. The activity then was, the ELAS was rather a lot. They were, you know, dropping shells in the villages, taking people prisoner, all sorts of things they were doing. We're in the villages. They never came too close to us, but we could hear them. You know, it was a village just up the road. And anyway, we were moving. It was Zante, we were going to Salonika. Well, that'd be better. So we got all prepared and we painted a number on every vehicle. We had 80 of our own. Well, 60 of them were, about 60 of them were, 50 were three tonners. There was 30 15 underweights, which weren't a lot of good, some of them. Because all these things, most of these vehicles have been all through the desert, don't they? 40, 50,000 miles, some of them had. You know, they were well worn out. Some were old desert chevs. Didn't have windows inside, they had a piece of plastic which is long since gone. They're probably lying over in Alamein or somewhere. And Bedfords, and we had some nice chefs, the later ones with a cut back windscreen, like Montgomery's Rolls Royce had. And a dozen jeeps and a staff car which were forever breaking down, breaking springs. And anyway, we had all our own vehicles and we got, I forget how many off the RASC, I think it was 40, 50, something like that, RASC vehicles, to get all their kit loaded on. And the last morning before we left, of course, it was up early to get all breakfast in the cooking stuff chucked in the back of the lorries and personal blankets and that. This was February 1947. So I had a Bedford 3-ton water cart to drive, full of water, somebody with me. And behind me was an old, ancient, 1930s vintage Morris commercial wrecker with a crane jib on, six-wheeler, and a workshop lorry behind that. That was it. And motorcycle or something down. We got just down the road about 5 miles, and mind you, I'm in a convoy that long. It takes a lot of moving. When the first one moves about a quarter of an hour before the last one even thinks about it, you know. I mean, we're talking about 80... about 140-something vehicles, you know, something like that. I stopped, come to a standstill, so the fitter's got him. I said, oh, the petrol pump's gone wrong. We haven't got any bits for it. We haven't got a pump. We had nothing for Bedford. We had nothing for much anyway. And we had a river to cross, the Strimmon. It was a ferry boat. It could take hours to get over. The time they sorted me, yeah, I got going, and we got tow. I was being taken on tow with this old Morris comical. Go down to Kavala, with some quite way they'd gone straight on, they still won't go through. They had nothing in the brigade workshops, but this lot was dark. I said, will you put me up? They said, no. I said, I got to the HLI then. So I turned off and went up to the HLI with this wrecker pulling me. We got up there, they put us up for the night. Next morning, they fixed the Bedford, got some petrol. So we took the road from the mountains that joined up from the coast road, the Strimmon, that joined up like that, you see. So we got going, got halfway through the morning, we come to the standstill. The Greek army were there poking about. I said, what's up, man? And he said, oh, he said, Eli's planted mines in the road. Not a very big one, but big enough to blow a wheel off. He said, one lorry's been blown up. He said, and it was a front wheel and killed the driver. Oh, dear. Greek. They were. So we must have been there a couple of hours, I suppose, while they dug up these, poked all around looking for more mines and whatever, you know, and the roads weren't tarmac roads like we know, it was just gravel, dirt and gravel. That's that lot, he said. But there might be more down the road further, he said, but we're not going any further, so we're off anyway. So we blasted off to Salonika and got into Salonika, found an MP on a Jeep. Where do we go? Where are we going to? Oh, he said, I'll tell you. So he took us right up, and we were right around the, Salonika's on a bay. I don't know if you know Salonika. It's on a bay, Athersall, that's over here, and around there. We were right over the other side, the Esplanade here, and around. Took us round there, and got us in for the night. Anyway, we sorted ourselves out, and it was bitterly cold still. Even then in Salonika, it was cold, because that wind was still hustling across the mountains. We had no fire, we had nothing. And as we moved into camp, the 17th, 21st Lancers had moved out. They came home. Left all their vehicles behind. We had to dispose of them. Artifacts and scout cars and whatever. So the quartermaster, who was the mate of Fred's, he joined at the same time, but they were both boys, 14. Flanagan. Never forget Flanagan. And we'll have to get some wood. He said, lay me on some vehicles. He said, I want four vehicles. He said, a Greek has got to let us have some wood. If we can't, two loads into his mill, into his yard for us, for him. I said, all right. So I laid on four vehicles. I was doing the whole roster for the MT, looking after them all this time. And we had a big billet with 80 fellas in it, in two-tier bunks, and our bit was at the end, two bits about the size of this. One was the office, and the other was three of us slept in the other half. The MT stores below, another corporal and me. So, I guess these four vehicles already, and the four best drivers we had, sort of thing, to go up the mountains to get this infernal wood. So they went off about 6 o'clock one more, and the Greek and his fellas met them at the gate, at the guard room, and off they went. Rations for the day, they'd be back about 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock came and went. 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. I phoned up the quartermaster guy, and he said, where are they? I don't know. We'll find out. So I telephoned brigade, no, nobody knew anything about them. Nobody heard anything about these people at all. I said, well, they could be dead. Nothing could have happened to them. I said, surely somebody must know something. No. Anyway, about 10 o'clock that night, got a message from brigade that three of the vehicles had broken down, and one of them was towing one. The other two were where they'd left them. One was an old American GMC. He had four flat tyres. He'd only taken one spare with him. He didn't expect to get four flat tyres. One of them had done something else, and one of them had done something else. Oh dear, oh dear. So I got a lorry, a Dodge lorry. Went and got some petrol. They sort of ran out of petrol as well. And they'd got on such and such a road out of Salonika. Well, we didn't know anything about Salonika. We'd only been there 3 or 4 days. We knew nothing about Salonika at all. So I got some petrol. I phoned up the messing officer in the mess. I said, I could get some food. No, no, you can't have any food. I said, well, these bugs are hungry. They're not going to eat all day. I don't care about that. Quartermaster was away. The MT officer was away. They were in brigade headquarters or something. So I got the Morris Wrecker as well. And a couple of blokes, and off we went. Up this half mountain. Trying to go down again. Stipey poles and soldiers in a box. We were on the wrong road. We'd got to the border between Greece and Yugoslavia, after quite a few hours of driving, I must add. They said, oh, no, you can't go to the area. So I said, well, I'm going to turn around then. There was over a turn round. I said, it's quite